listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 252 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This episode, we are taking a look at genre preferences, or the kind of genres across different types of media that the three of us tend to enjoy the most, or tend to seek out the most. There's going to be maybe some surprises for some, if you're a long-time listener. Probably not surprises, actually, if you're a long-term listener.
No.
Yeah, actually, no surprises if you're a long-term listener. No, there's no surprises. But I thought I'd let the polls go first, because they seem to have a joint favourite after we had our pre-episode discussion. It seemed to be... It came out of that.
You see...
Largely, yeah.
I mean, because we're going to obviously be talking about sci-fi, but I do wonder at what point stuff... kind of isn't quite genre, but subgenre. So I feel sometimes sci-fi ventures into the subgenre a little bit, rather than just regular genre.
I mean, to be fair, I make a differentiation between like full-on speculative fiction and something that's actually, it is actually high fantasy, it just happens to be in space, that would be like something like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Whereas Star Trek is a bit more speculative fiction.
Yeah.
See where I'm going with that? But also then Star Wars tends to get labelled as a space opera.
It is.
Or a Western in space.
I mean, if you think about, say, for example, comedy... You can have basically comedy as a subgenre of, you know,
romantic comedy, action comedy,
horror comedy.
Yeah, horror comedy. I'm trying to think of something like The Big Lebowski's a black comedy.
There's obviously situational comedy and stuff like that. Basically, there's a whole host of like different types of comedy.
Docu comedy.
That's more mockumentary.
Mockumentary, okay, yeah, fair.
But I think to a certain extent, sci-fi can sometimes fall into that, because you know, like sci-fi can generally tend to be comedic. It can be you know, dramatic. It can be Western, even, you know, stuff like Westworld.
He's saying that it cross-pollinates its genres.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does.
It can be all sorts. It just depends. It's a very that's why it annoys me if you get, oh, I don't like sci-fi. Just really?
Yeah, it's a bit like saying that you don't like comedies. Like, you know, comedy is like a very, very wide thing. If you're saying that you don't like comedies, you don't like laughing.
Yeah, it's that you don't like having fun. It's like, oh yeah, on a, you know, kind of dating app thing, I like having fun. It's that, well, no shit. I like being fucking miserable, so I'm afraid we just wouldn't get on. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just such a bollocks turn. You don't like speculative fiction. Well, that can be anything. That can be.
Could speculative fiction also be like conspiracy based speculative?
I feel like conspiracy theory tends to be its own thing. You might have some speculative fiction that might decide to use a conspiracy theory as its sounding board.
That's what they said you'd say.
But like, okay, so something like X-Files, there's a fuckload of conspiracy theory shit in that. I would not define it by that. I would call it kind of like almost like a form of low science fiction.
Well, I mean, some of the stories that, I mean, especially towards the end as well, that gets very much sci-fi.
I mean, maybe even, it's not quite pulp, though, because there's not all those kind of femme fatales running around the place. That, I mean, sometimes Scully, I mean, maybe a bit. But kind of like with actual kind of like presentable, you know, personality at the same time.
Now, here's a question. How would you define pulp? I've got my own, you know, definition.
I think it depends whether or not it's like, I know, I can't think of definitions. I can just think of stuff I think of when I think of pulp, like certain types of cereal, like maybe like Flash Gordon type stuff, or something like the old, like stuff that's like actually quite old but got adapted a lot during the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
So like maybe Dick Tracy. The Phantom is a bit pulpy. Rocketeer. What's the, not Phantom, but the other one, but it's, is it Alan, one of the Baldwins, The Shadow. Stuff like that. To me, it's quite pulpy.
Because I would say that, you know, you have your hard sci-fi, which is, you know, where people are talking about, you know, equations. And then you've got your kind of your middle ground, where it's like Star Trek, where, you know, they try and ground it as much as possible in something that would work as a system.
Mm.
And then you've got things like, say, I would define Farscape and Stargate SG-1 as sort of, you know, modern pulp sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because they use, you know, they're dressed up as sci-fi and they have sci-fi ideas, but you don't have that much science in them. It's just, you know, the sci-fi is there as a method.
Oh, I've just thought of something newer that I would class as pulp. Sin City.
Yes, but that was already kind of,
yeah, that was
he created it as,
yeah, you know. that was a chased after feel and aesthetic, so yeah. But then if you guys, I mean, I like science fiction, but I don't think as much as you two both do. But then what are some of your, like, standout science fiction texts, like, across mediums?
Well, I mean, obviously Star Trek. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Both Trekkies.
Yeah.
I do like Star Trek more than Star Wars, actually, so.
You know, as you may remember, one of my all-time favourite, when it comes to, you know, the original text, the, you know, the original novel and movie, Blade Runner. So, now, if anything is going to be screwing about with the idea of AI and what that is and what constitutes sentience, then I'm there. I'm right there.
Absolutely. You know,
Until you forget to write the end of the series.
But yeah, I think some of my most favourite sci-fi kind of looks at problems that we may face in the future. Like, say, for example, like an AI being developed that is pretty much indistinguishable from, like, any other sentient, you know, life form. And it's like, we do give them rights, don't we? But, you know, that they are allowed a say in how they, you know, operate and how they act, and, you know, whether they can be disassembled and recompiled against their will and shit like that.
Yeah, I would say, as an excellent example of something like that, would be a Star Trek episode, which is Measure of a Man, Next Generation, where there's the court case of whether Data has the right to say no to being disassembled and duplicated.
And I think Voyager tried to do a similar type thing with the Doctor and the Holo novel situation.
Yeah, they did, but with it being Voyager, even though it was EMH, it was worse. Just saying,
it was
fair.
Voyager.
Okay, but then going continue with the science fiction side of things here. Do you prefer stuff where, obviously, because you talk about possible futures, Paul, but
yeah.
So do you prefer stuff then where there's a clear lineage from our own time?
I think I generally tend to, as a kind of like, this is what it could be like in the future, rather than being like, this is a, you know, far off fantasy world where, you know, it kind of doesn't really relate to us and we're just kind of watching because, you know, it's set in space.
I do kind of quite like the, it's almost, you can get so many sub-genres of sci-fi where, say, something appears like it could, you know, it's set in the past, so it's like a fantasy setting. But then they may just walk past something which is obviously an old destroyed street sign. So one example of that would be Into the Badlands, which you are going to watch. If you've got access to Amazon, it is up on there, where it's all sort of, you know, kung fu and warlords and, you know, fighting and et cetera. But it is post-apocalyptic because the warlords tend to have taken over old, you know, plantation houses. And, you know, the richer they are, the more powerful they are, they've got old world technology. So, for example, cars and motorbikes.
Oh, okay.
But they're kind of integrated in a, you know, we've got these and they're still running. You don't get much reference to, you know, the world that's gone. And you don't know when it's set. Only that you know, there was some kind of cataclysm. And some of the things that they refer to as gifts or curses are science. They have a scientific backing. And that's especially true in, you know, the latest one where there's a gift which will turn people into murder machines, more or less. And it turns their eyes black, and it's revealed that there is a machine which looks a lot like a big room that's got, you know, banks of computers around the outside, and that's part of the machine that can, you know, give people this gift. So you've got the sort of future past.
But then, okay.
Or thinking there, you've also got things like Dune.
Yeah.
Where they've got all the trapping of, you know, the old world, because the technology has been around for so long, but they've also got, you know, space folding and spice and, you know, personal shields, you know, all of that kind of thing.
I have to move the, because is there a new Dune film or series coming out?
There's supposed to be a new film.
I do wonder if people are going to be making comparisons between it and Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but those people can go to hell.
But I can imagine that happening. I feel like it's a real possibility that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see how a future world of ultimate power and...
I think it's more...
Rob families and eugenics could possibly be, you know, relevant to our recent history.
But also, I'm just thinking of the Game of Thrones thing. It's just kind of like the dysfunctional ruling individuals and families.
Yeah.
More than anything else. Okay, what about... Because obviously you're talking about like something like Into the Badlands. So is it then technically dystopian science fiction or...
I would say so, yeah. I mean, for the longest time, especially in the 80s, you know, for some reason, we seemed to have a nuclear apocalypse on our mind in the 80s when it came to, you know, fiction. There was a lot of post-apocalyptic stuff. And, you know, whether that was a direct, you know, this is post-apocalyptic and because this is what happened, or, you know, it's just people in the world after it happened. But there was a lot of stuff that was, you know, directly, you know, Mad Max. But I mean, moment. Even Star Trek has nuclear war.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nuclear war and eugenics, but it's kind of, you know, humanity comes out the other side.
Absolutely. I mean...
Learning from it and going, well, we won't do that again. That was a bit crap.
Yeah, in a way, Star Trek, you know, its hope springs out of despair, which is, you know, actually quite, you know, nice thought, really, because you get a lot of sci-fis which are about despair, you know.
It's interesting because with sci-fi, I have had discussions on Twitter with people who have taken issue with my description of it as a luxury space communism.
It pretty much is.
Yeah, and is it, well, you know, but, you know, communism doesn't work. You know, communism is a, you know, totalitarian thing. So, yeah, but you're living in a future where everything is catered for because you've got matter replication.
Mm.
So, effectively, you've got rid of want.
Yeah.
If someone wants medical, you know, supplies, they can just replicate it from any kind of matter. These machines can replicate themselves. So no one has to toil just for the purpose of staying alive to be able to feed themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you've got rid of that, once you've got rid of survival, then it all becomes very equal.
That's the thing. I mean, how often nowadays do people turn around and say that, you know, they don't want to just survive, they actually want to live?
Mm.
Yeah, and then you get people whinging that, oh, this, you know, this person is on benefits and yet they have a massive TV.
I always hate it when people complain about that because, I mean, you don't know how they got that TV. You know, that could have actually been a gift. That could have actually been left to them in a will.
That could have been scrimping and saving. And also... Yeah. Large TVs are cheap. Large TVs can be bought for... I mean, you can get a 40-odd inch TV from, you know, around the corner because I live near an Aldi.
Hmm.
And, yeah, it's just, you know, once you get to the point where all these things, you know, the basics and more are catered for, that's kind of a utopian, you know, world that comes out of it because you've got rid of want and need... and dysfunction of distribution.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's kind of, you know, that's why it just bends my mind when I find, you know, Trump supporting Star Trek groups on places like Facebook. So have you not paid attention to any of it? You're not learning from all these... examples that, you know, they give in the series and are in I would have thought inherent to the universe.
Yeah,
where you're not, you know, basically you're not supposed to be an asshole, you help people and there you go. But apparently that's very complicated.
I mean, that's the way that the Federation works, is by basically having a load of different races you know, kind of coming together for one common goal.
Yeah, and that is one reason I've always liked Star Trek, because you have, you know, there are going to be arseholes, and in the original series it was always going to be an admiral.
Yeah.
But by and large, people wouldn't be wankers. Because what was the point? You're not going to get rich in a world that effectively doesn't have money.
Nope.
So, yeah. But, of course, I like all the other series which, you know, have their own spins on that. It's just that, you know, Star Trek has come up with these, you know, technologies. You know, the whole, you know, infamously, because it was too expensive, the idea of, you know, having a little ship land on a planet. So let's invent transporters. But, you know, once you've got that idea and, you know, you've talked to people who, you know, have, you know, kind of one foot in science...
Yeah.
With how this would work, then you can extrapolate from that, and a lot of what Star Trek is comes from that.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how, you know, accurate some of its predictions are. You know?
Yeah, there are some when I'm you know, I'm watching old episodes. I know it will shock everyone. but I blame Netflix because they just happen to have, you know, them, you know, the series on. You know,
at least in the, at so least in the UK they do.
At least in the UK, yes. It used to be on Amazon. You know, Amazon used to have loads of the series, but now it's on Netflix. But yeah, you know, looking through them, and it's always so glaring when they have the little data pads. And, you know, on one hand, they're like phones or tablets. So they're ahead of their time. On the other hand, why do you have a giant pile of them? So it's almost just, you know, amazingly accurate. But on the other hand, they couldn't get past the idea that you would have to have several. So
Okay, move us back towards the dystopia one a minute. Because one thing I have noticed about young adult novels and one thing, more at female readers, a lot of dystopia. Is like Hunger Games isn't the only dystopia.
That's true. I mean, there's stuff like, was it Maze Runner and Divergent series,
And there's more, way more than that.
I do not know the Divergent series.
They're on Netflix. A bunch of them are on Netflix, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Netflix.
Series of films.
I quite enjoyed, but it's you can tell that it's part of a growing, or at least at the time it was growing. I'm not sure whether it's still growing, but a kind of specific kind of targeted genre.
Yeah, but what I want to know is how dystopia kind of suddenly became quite so, like became so popular, other than the Hunger Games series of books, because obviously that. But why did it suddenly explode in interest in these sort of young adult readers and the moviegoers?
Maybe it's because I mean the protagonists of those, you know, series are young people.
That's fine, but it's the setting and the.
You know, could I wonder that maybe it's something to do with the adults repeatedly fucking everything up?
it's kind of not being relatable.
Yeah, young people trying to create their own future that is, you know, free from the past. Because these things are always about bringing down the established system.
Not novel, but still popular with that kind of like mid-teens to like 30, 40-something age group. TV, The 100, would technically come to that as well. I've never seen snippets of The 100, but it's interesting. That I can only offer observations. I haven't spoken to any teens who are like seriously into young adult novels lately, so... I can't.
Put it this way, it's better, you know, them watching and reading that than Twilight.
I mean,
you see, I don't know what it's like to read Twilight, but
it's painful to read Twilight due to the quality of the writing.
Films was quite enough, thanks.
It's just
as we did on a previous episode. Yes. Go and listen to that. That's good. If you want to hear, you know, sounds of torment and torture and hell.
A real dystopia.
Yeah.
Where the only films available to watch are the Twilight series.
Oh, Christ.
You see,
that's why society fell. It was either, you know, we watch Twilight again, or we, you know, beat each other to death with sticks.
We chose the latter.
One final dystopia point. One of the most popular TV series at the moment is a dystopia, and that's Handmaid's Tale.
Yes. Oh God, did you see that? Oh Jesus! You know the old thing of, you know, the straights are at it again, and are the straights okay?
What was it for?
It was a couple who lived in the city where large chunks of the Handmaid's Tale TV series is filmed. So they had a Handmaid's Tale-themed wedding photo set.
Oh.
And to just to top it off in the... Really? Are you lot real? Really? They posed for it under the hanging wall, as they called it. So, you know, for anyone who's not seen it, there's a wall next to a river where they hang all the traitors. and just, you know, leave them to rot.
Nice.
And so you've got this couple kissing each other, you know, in a white wedding dress and a suit, and then they're surrounded by, you know, the handmaidens in red with the, you know, the white.
Yeah.
And it's just, have you watched it? Have you watched it and do you understand? It's just, oh God.
Paul's making a face.
Anyway, yes. I thought it was worth mentioning that in the Jesus Christ, what is wrong with you people?
Yeah. Like, people ideally shouldn't want to live the dystopias. Like, other bits of sci-fi, it might be kind of like a sort of like dream fulfillment type thing to imagine, you know, being a part of that sci-fi. But dystopias, maybe no. Maybe lots of no. Oh, but then here's an interesting question. Something like The Walking Dead, which is airing its season 10 premiere whilst we record this, and we are all sacrificing the opportunity to not watch it so that we can record this episode.
We'll be watching it after.
We'll be watching it before we record our next episode, so we'll have views then on the opener. But anyway, Walking Dead. Now, you could say horror, and I'd be like, yeah, okay, fair play, yeah. Horror, because it's a zombie thing and that, and lots of grim things happen in it. But the nature of the disease, at least how it is handled in season one towards the end, is also perhaps reminiscent of science fiction. Yeah. And obviously, you know, like a little bit. And then it's then how things kind of evolve from that. It's kind of dystopia, you know, along with the horrors. I feel like it kind of circles like horror, dystopia and sci-fi just like a little bit. Yeah, it's got this weird Venn diagram thing going on. What do you guys think?
I would definitely concur with that. I mean, although obviously zombies aren't usually classed as a sci-fi trope or, you know, conventional, you know, subgenre.
I think it depends on the thing.
Yeah, it definitely does depend on the thing. So, I mean, say for example, what was it? I'm just thinking about Mass Effect with
Legion infection-y.
Yeah, because those are pretty much like zombies and whatnot. And,
yeah.
You know, it's... I think zombies in general, at least the modern interpretation of zombies, because they're always about either present day or near future, they've got the sci-fi edge to them, because there's also the sense of kind of biotechnology and, you know...
And stuff going wrong. Certainly the feeling with something like that in like 28 days later. Yeah. I mean, I know some people argue about whether or not it's zombies, but it's kind of like, come on, it's about a disease that kind of makes people go crazy and try to eat other people.
Yes. I've actually recently watched three zombie-themed films recently.
What have you seen?
Well, first of all, I think I mentioned on the podcast previously, we watched The Girl with All the Gifts.
Sweet.
Have you seen that?
No, but I keep looking at the book because it's one of the most prominently displayed books in like Waterstones, or at least in our book of Waterstones.
The film is good. So, you know, hearty recommendation there. For anyone who wants to know, it's kind of The Last of Us, the film.
No, you see, with it, I do wonder about which is more similar or came first, because when I've read the back of it, it does sound, other than The Last of Us album, which is obviously fungal, but it does remind me a bit of The Passage.
I am not aware of that one.
It's a very long book and has several follow-up books that are a bit shorter. But I think an adaptation for TV or film has been made of that previously, but it was kind of low key. But yeah, just kind of like you've got that one genetic sample, as it were, that one person, girl, who is very different to everyone else and isn't affected by things in the same way.
Yes. That is basically the, you know, the main similarity with The Last of Us. But yeah, it's a very good film in its own right, and I liked how it ended. I'm just saying that. Two other films we watched lately. Right, well, for the first of all, which I'll mention primarily because I can remember the name, is an Irish film called The Cured.
Hmm.
Where the idea is there's kind of like a zombie rage virus, but most places manage to get a lockdown fairly quickly, other than the Republic of Ireland.
Oh dear.
Where it, you know, it gets a bit bad, but you start the film where a cure has been found, and it follows the the story of one of these cured, and his attempt to return with a few others into their previous lives. What I liked about it was the idea that, you know, they did horrendous things, but it crops up during the course of the film. I'm trying not to spoil anything. Mm-hmm. It said quite early on that they remembered everything that they did. So when they're cured, they are, you know, they are 100% aware of everything that they did.
Wow.
And that in itself, I think, is an interesting idea. But of course, it's who they encountered when they were infected, how it affects the people who are left behind, and how much of a say, how much of them was there when they were infected, and how much of the, or, you know, who they were when they were infected remains now they are cured.
It's a question.
It's quite a good film. And it's got Ellen Page in it. And, you know, to be fair to her, I think it's more of a, you know, because they probably got more funding.
Mm.
Because she's, you know, a little bit out of place because everyone else is Irish. But she plays the sister-in-law of the main character who has been cured. And she lost her, you know, well, they lost the brother / husband, and that's an issue in the film. But yeah, there are lots of similarities. Like, for example, there are people who do not, under any circumstance, want the cured living anywhere near them. So there are protests, there are attacks. That you've got some similarities to the Troubles in Northern Ireland, because, you know, you've got people who are, you know, under the heel.
Yeah.
And what are they going to do about it? So, you know, you've got all of that going on. It's a low budget film, which again is, you know, why I mentioned that I think Ellen Page was in there as a, you know, kind of a, you know, get more attention to it, bring more to it. Mm. She does a good job in it, and I like Ellen Page anyway. So, you know, that's always a bonus. But yeah, it's low budget, and you do see some of the infected, and you get one or two flashbacks to it. And it does remind me a bit of 28 Days Later. Because they are, you know, they act, you know, psychotic and heavy breathing and, you know, hyperactive, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
But out of control. So that was a good one. Now, I'm just looking through the viewing history on Netflix. Here Alone. There we go.
Here Alone?
Yeah, Here Alone.
Here Alone, sorry, okay.
Yeah. When she finally encounters two of the survivors, a woman alone in a world decimated by a zombie epidemic struggles to trust her new companions. Another, by the looks of it, quite low, you know, budget. But, a woman who's living alone in... It looks like, you know, the middle of nowhere, you know, some wooded area. And it covers her surviving. And, you know, stuff like she's, collecting food. She's, I won't go that much into it. But basically, you know, she is surviving. And then a man and his stepdaughter, you know, turn up. And it's the, can she trust them? And you gradually find out what happened to her, because she didn't go there into the forest alone. What she's doing to survive, what the infected are like, and you know what these two strangers are like. And it's a more complicated one because it is, you know, it's directly in the aftermath. You know, yeah. There's no cure. They're just having to deal with a really shitty situation. But again, it's quite good. It's low budget. You see their version of the infected again a few times, and yeah. Just one of the lines I quite like was, the only reason they haven't moved up here is because they haven't finished eating the dead. So that's another good, you know, zombie film. So you do get these, you know, spins where that you have an idea, you know, obviously, you know, the writer has an idea and they decide to explore it with this backdrop of what would people do? How would people survive?
Mm. Well, I mean, it's a bit like Warm Bodies as well. That was a film that was very much romantic comedy, but zombies. And there's also a film called Undead, which I think was like an Aussie production. And that was a weird kind of dead coming back to life, but it involved aliens.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was a bit weird.
Also, I think it was last year we watched Cargo, which had Martin Freeman, of all people, as a survivor in, like, Australia, which is, like, of course, Martin Freeman in Australia is the first thing I thought of when you said zombies.
But, I mean, there's also several other emerging kind of sci-fi type series as well. Like, say, for example, was it Under the Dome was one, and The Society, basically where, like, a group of people are kind of trapped under unknown circumstances. That is definitely sci-fi because, you know, of the general premise of how they're trapped. Mm.
Under the Dome's an adaptation of a Stephen King novel, also, I believe.
But there's also a new Stephen King adaptation on Netflix. I noticed we saw the trailer last night called In the Long Grass.
Mm. There's also on Stars on Amazon, Mr. Mercedes, which is another Stephen King adaptation as well. Oh, and I think I've previously said that I can't remember if I said specifically what Doctor Sleep is as an adaptation that's coming to screens. It is a film. I can't remember if I'd said TV series, but it's actually a film. Just putting that there. Anyway, so you guys like science fiction. Okay. Cool. I'm surprised Battlestar Galactica and Babylon 5 didn't get mentions, man.
Well, I did mention it, but only in the context of it helps if you know how your story is going to end.
Oh yeah, did I hear right that there was some chatter about rebooting Galactica again or something to that effect?
I think was there something like, it's not a reboot, but it's like another story or another type of retelling or something. Basically, I think it's not meant to turn around and go, that stuff wasn't real, this is the real stuff, like most reboots do. Well, some reboots do. Some reboots are like, no, that stuff did happen, but we're going to do it again anyway.
Yeah. But
All in all, I'm quite pleased with how genre is going, because it's like the 2000s were a bit of a barren time when it comes to, you know, sci-fi. But I think that, you know, it seems to be with the birth of, you know, well, not with the birth, but the real, you know, pickup of streaming. Hmm. Sci-fi seems to be getting more of a lease of life, and that includes things like, you know, zombie movies, where it was a bit, well, what can you do when you've, you know, you've got like three Ash films and, you know, three, you know, Night of, or, you know, whatever. You know, if Romero is not making them, can you really get away with a zombie film? But as it turns out, yes, you can.
Very much can.
Yeah.
Anyway, Emily, because you've pretty much been poking me with your eyes for...
That sounds painful.
Yeah, it was a little bit. Yes, we've said about sci-fi. What about your favourite genre or genres?
I think my main fave is kind of low fantasy. I mean, okay, I'll watch and occasionally read high fantasy, so like Tolkien, Game of Thrones, Robin Hobb's novels and stuff. But actually, I'm much more receptive to kind of low fantasy stuff. So obviously, like Supernatural, Dresden Files, the Rivers of London series of novels by Ben Aronovich, that kind of stuff, which obviously then classes over into like urban fantasy. I mean, I class it as low fantasy because you can talk about it without talking about the setting as much as more the actual kind of magical elements involved in the supernatural and paranormal. I suppose also in a way, like, I mean, but then something like Supernatural, like people try to classify as horror, but actually it's kind of like, well, it's got horror elements. And certainly the other seasons are a bit more horror than the later ones, but they're still, it's still not outright horror. You know, you've got people using magic and spells and skills to kind of get on with things. That, I'd say Dresden Files has probably got a bit more of that going on. And then obviously like stuff like Buffy and Winona Earp. Which I still haven't seen the third season of. Waiting.
I mean, also includes, well, I think traditional monster type, you know, kind of things, really. Werewolves, vampires.
Yeah, but I mean, then again, those all kind of move over to into horror. I think it depends how much of society you decide, or of a society you decide to represent, as to whether or not it ends up being outright horror, or if it's, like, I would class Dracula, the original novel, as horror. Like, I would not class that as low fantasy. But something like Buffy, going more for low fantasy than horror. But also something like the Harry Potter novels, like, still quite low fantasy, still low fantasy. In fact, I would, like, if I was going to kind of look at the Harry Potter novels versus the Discworld novels, Discworld's kind of a far, it's a far higher level of fantasy. It's kind of more towards high fantasy. It just happens to have comedy going on in it. But yes, I really like stuff where you still kind of got that real world element kind of going on. And Retroid, the thingy, was it, what's the one on Amazon, the new Carnival?
Carnival Row.
Yeah, that kind of is something I do want to watch based on that as well. But yeah, I mean, you can have sort of like low fantasy that's like really kind of like, there's not much going on, there's just an element there, but it's like a step above something like magical realism. What would be just a step above? Maybe something like Fade or being human.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I would think so, because those use. Yeah, I'm still annoyed that the Fade's got cancelled. Bloody BBC.
Well, this is the story of BBC Three.
It is, yeah.
But yeah, so like low fantasy, like that's another thing. But then, and I don't think it was always the way, but another genre that I kind of like a bit, and it tends to be a fallback for me when it comes to stuff like what I'll have on if I'm exercising at home, is kind of like, it's a mix between kind of like crime shows and espionage.
Yeah.
Shows. So like crime wise, I mean, okay, I've watched some procedural stuff, but I've like heavily gone off really procedural crime shows at the moment. Like, I'd rather, and I've started watching it for the first time recently, I'd rather watch The Sopranos than Criminal Minds. Like,
yeah.
I'd rather watch something like, trying to think,
Homeland.
Yeah, I'd rather watch Homeland than,
I mean, Borderlands.
So what?
Badlands, not Borderlands.
What the? What?
No, it's just part of my campaign.
Okay.
Badlands.
See,
that's not a procedural. It's a sequential.
Yes, but is it about crime?
There's crime in it.
Yeah, but it's not really about crime. Something, but then something like you know, like Breaking Bad, Weeds, stuff like that, where you've got like you've got story developing. Like they tried for years to develop stuff in some of their Criminal Minds, but it just got so repetitive. And like I went through a massive binge. I think it was earlier last year of Elementary, and that was fun. But then it got to a point, I think probably around season 5, where I was just like, maybe not. And I might go back to it someday, but then I've also previously in the past like shows like The Mentalist, but it did quite a good job of coming back to kind of like one of its main opening story points, which was to do with Red John and kind of evolving that as a concept. So that was okay, even though it was very much case of the week for most of the seasons.
Yeah, and another crossover there would be Lucifer.
Yeah. So that obviously kind of sits in that kind of low fantasy and then kind of like crime sort of Venn diagram basically going on there.
Yeah.
Also, it does remind me slightly of iZombie as well. That was, that was another kind of crime, but...
But then it also had a bit of sci-fi about it too. You know.
If you think about it, iZombie... It's just the modern day Quantum Leap.
It is a bit. But then, I know iZombie also, though, reminds me of what happened with stuff like True Calling. It's just True Calling had still had corpses, just less brains.
True, true.
Apart from when they really picked it up at, you know, right near the end. But of course, at that point, it had already been axed.
Yes. Mm. That would have been interesting having, you know, them in all in both in the same universe.
Yeah. Yeah, series that I've never watched, but obviously fits within this kind of, now that we've kind of gone into this low fantasy crime kind of, Medium. Never watched Medium, even though it would obviously kind of cross those points a bit.
Yeah.
I've seen bits. I've never seen the full episode.
Yeah. I tried watching the... Well, we watched... Oh, it was a few weeks ago now. We watched the... Because Amazon Prime in the UK has got Psyched. That kind of...
What's that then?
It's... Oh, is it Psyched or Psych?
Psych.
Psych, sorry. American show. It's about a guy who pretends to be a psychic. And, like... But, like, so the opposite of... Jane in The Mentalist. In the sense that obviously he used to pretend he was a psychic and then he went like legit, and but he knows obviously all the mentalist tricks to like
help solve the crime
but also draw people in if he has to put on a show. Whereas Psych's about a guy who knows all the mentalist kind of stuff and then purposely pretends to be a psychic in order to work cases with the police and get paid to do it. I know there's a, I've got quite a few American friends who are quite fond of it, but we tried watching the I suppose it was the pilot, but it was quite long. It was like over an hour. I'm not sure if I could quite get into it, even though in theory it kind of has similarities of stuff that I like.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's like that, you know, just because a show is in a genre that you really, really enjoy doesn't mean that you're going to enjoy the show.
This is true.
There has to be, you know, certain levels of polish and certain levels of ideas and thoughts behind it.
This is definitely very true. There's a lot of...
Kitty.
Yeah. Got cat.
Hey, cows.
There we go. She's decided that I really need my leg head butting a bit.
Okay. But the other, like going back to the espionage side, because we said Homeland, I liked the first season of Spooks, but I've never kind of gone back to it. What else? 24. I really liked 24 back in the day.
Well, like first season.
Sorry.
Do you have a cat knocking everything over as well?
No, we have a feedback issue that is frustrating. That's good.
We're just getting live commentary here, whether you want it or need it or not. And obviously we need it, that's why she's here.
Hmm. Yeah. So you know what's interesting? None of us have said comic book movies, which obviously kind of cross over a lot into like sci-fi and fantasy, and a bit of space opera and western, depending on what the hell's going on.
I mean, I like some comic book stuff, but then there's so much of it produced that you kind of get a bit lost with it, and it feels like a chore to keep up with everything.
Which is ironic, because like 20 years ago it didn't feel like that.
Well, no, because everything was disconnected and
and there wasn't as much being produced.
Yeah,
that's always the thing. I used to watch a lot more of, you know, old genre TV, because if there was anything even slightly, you know, like horror, sci-fi, fantasy, anything like that, you know, that wasn't about Joe Bloggs has stolen, you know, mutton chops from the butcher, so, you know, we're going to have to, you know, find him. Oh, there's been a murder, you know, all that kind of thing. You know, no thanks. Or, you know, soaps, no. Anything that even slightly genre, I would just leap on. But now, there's a lot more.
There's a lot more, and it's a bit harder to, like, okay, people wreck stuff all the time to us, don't they, Retroid? But there's so much stuff around that it's kind of like... And also just access to previous series. Like, I didn't get to watch The Sopranos growing up.
That was another thing. We had, you know, just a handful of channels, and the fragmentation you had was something would be on Sky.
Yeah.
Whereas now, oh, it's on Netflix. Oh, it's on Amazon. Oh, it's on a subsection of Amazon that you buy as an add-on.
But you know what? I think the situation is even worse in the US. A friend of ours was kind of like lamenting the fact, and considering that she renewed her cable package in the States with a particular provider, and then last night she went to watch the new Batwoman series that's just started on the CW channel, just afternoon, suddenly no longer available via that cable provider. And CW is the same channel that also shows Supernatural, and she's a big Supernatural fan, so it's kind of like, oh, like, to have something like that suddenly happen, like you just have a channel just kind of drop like that.
Oh, it's just gone away.
Yeah, and part of it is because it looks like maybe CW in the US wants cable providers to pay them more for having the channel.
Yeah, but I've seen most of the CW's schedule.
Yeah. Good luck with. It's like, I have to admit, I don't know what's going to happen with CW when the steam finally runs out on comic book TV series. Because Supernatural's ending, obviously, after this.
Well, Arrow's going to be...
And Arrow.
I'm not sure how much the Flash has got left.
Supergirl's got touch and go situation, and Supergirl obviously wasn't even originally on there.
Quite moved to the CW, didn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard bits and dabs about this. What is it? Christ on Infinite Earth
adaptation.
Is that meant to be like, you know, one of the tie-in events that they keep on doing, or is it like
it's going to be a massive tie-in event?
Massive tie-in event.
Yeah.
Crisis of Infinite Arse.
But yeah, so going back to the positive, I noticed that basically comic book isn't actually anyone's favorite, and it's a weird kind of meta genre, because obviously comic book adaptations are of different genres. We mentioned a couple earlier, like The Rocketeer, The Phantom, and The Shadow are like very different things.
I would say in a lot of ways the comic book movies and TV series are, you know, extremely pulp. Mostly because, you know, comics were just done by a few men in offices.
I would also say that because we're still kind of used to comic book films and comic book TV series being like its own thing, and it's like, well, technically speaking, there's a difference between comic book and superhero genre. You know, because, say, for example, Preacher is technically a comic book-based, you know, thing, whereas it's not really a superhero-based thing.
No.
And superhero genres, they do have, you know, kind of interesting stuff going on sometimes, I mean, MCU is obviously the biggest one, and you know they have like big events and blah blah. But then you also have stuff like The Boys,
yeah,
as well, which I really really enjoyed.
But then it was kind of anti superhero.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a similar thing happened with Watchmen as well.
Mm.
That was,
and,
that
but then
was
that's getting a, and that's getting a TV series
yeah.
starting yeah, soon now as well.
And we'll see about that TV series.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the trailers for it yet.
I've seen teasers for it. Eh. Anyway, I think I'm going to wrap this up a bit.
Are there any last points?
Obviously, like, genre TV is interesting, and a lot of genre stuff actually crosses over with other genres.
Yeah, it's not like in set lines, like this show is sci-fi, this show is fantasy,
this film is crime.
This
video game.
It all blurs together.
Except you do get the odd one, which is like a pure... Like, Ad Astra was kind of pure science fiction.
Oh, yeah,
fiction,
yeah, that
and
was...
And we saw that recently.
That was pure science fiction.
I wonder, personally, whether or not the shows, the films, the games, the books, or whatever, where there's actually a degree of kind of cross-pollination happening. Yeah, that Venn diagram's got all the circles meeting over one spot. I do wonder if those do better. It'd be interesting to kind of have like a genre analysis and to profit kind of like thing going on and just seeing, you know, if stuff that's kind of not just hard set one genre actually does better than others that are obviously set genre.
In the future, are we going to see a, you know, TV series set in space with, you know, vampires and werewolves and whatnot, and it's actually, you know, so like one of them's a detective, you know, trying to solve a murder or something, and yeah.
Do you know what, there's probably a B-movie that's like that already.
I will just say that this ties in nicely with the film that I was going to mention.
Mm-hmm.
And a series I've just watched.
Ooh.
Sci horror.
What's that? So,
well, things like Dead Space, Event Horizon,
or
the recent series, which I thought was Netflix, but it turns out it was Sci-Fi Channel, which explains why it's already been cancelled.
Oh dear.
Which was Night Flyers.
Okay.
Which, you know, went into with low expectations. And it turns out that it's from the mind of George R. R. Martin. Based on a novella written by him.
Yeah.
Where the idea is there's an expedition led by a scientist going to the outer reaches of the solar system, and it's set at the, you know, the end of this century. So, you know, obviously technology is much better, but they don't have FTL. So it takes them, you know, a long time to get there. And it's whether this object that's been, you know, discovered and is apparently making course corrections is an alien ship or not. Mm. And there are supernatural elements because there are weird things going on the ship. They have a telepath, an extraordinarily high-level telepath that most people on the ship are scared shitless of. And so he has a very bad attitude towards most people on the ship anyway, because he literally knows that they hate him.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of, you know, weird stuff going on. In fact, the first episode starts off with a scientist being hunted by another crew member wielding an axe. Before she manages to get off a message saying, you know, do not bring the Night Flyer back to Earth. And then she cuts her run through it. And then it's, you know, a year earlier.
Oh, that trope.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. But what I quite liked was the, it slightly spins on that trope because the, you know, what you think is, you know, how it all ends up is not. That is, you know, that happens quite near the end, but there are reasons for it and not the most obvious ones, and the story continues on from that point. So yeah, you've got aliens, or are they? You've got telepaths, you've got horrific imagery or is it? And is it caused by, you know, psychic interference by the aliens, if they exist, or is it something else? And you've got one sequence where they're looking for someone on the ship. So several of the security detail program a like a little robotic spider drone, which then gets its programming changed somehow and slaughters them.
Eek.
By, you know, more or less slicing them up. So yeah, you've got a lot of stuff that goes on in the series. Some of it is you know, well thought out and, you know, kept me guessing. Other bits are a bit, yeah, I can kind of tell that this is Sci-Fi Channel. But in general, it was quite a good series and it was a good mix. So yeah, I'm slightly annoyed, but yeah, that kind of reminded me there, because the whole idea of, you know, you can have, you know, sci-fi horror is quite a rich vein that you could tap into. There's a lot that could go wrong in sci-fi that could be quite horrific.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, the Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds film Life?
Oh. I have not seen that.
Oh, that thing we tried watching.
What do you mean tried?
Watching. We did watch.
Yeah, we watched it at the cinema.
Oh, yeah, no, I was thinking something else with Ryan Reynolds and it's fine.
Hey, what?
That awful thing that we tried watching on Netflix, which we gave up on eventually, where he, the whole body transference, soul, mind thing.
Oh, that one. Yeah. I think we just got tired and...
No, we could have gone back to it, but we didn't, because it actually got really repetitive towards the end. But anyway, no, Life, the, yeah. In space. Mind you, the containment procedures on that spacecraft were, or that space station were, absolutely and utterly fucking appalling.
Oh, yeah, there's a... I'll just... You know, if you watch it, again, with it being a Sci-Fi Channel series, you're not going to get anything, you know, which is, you know, like body horror.
Yeah.
You know, to a huge degree. But there is one of the most traumatic post-birth sequences.
What?
And it's in scientific grounding, and it's not... It's not your typical sort of lazy, oh, something happens to the woman, you know, because the baby claws out, or, you know, something stupid like that. It's not like that. It goes badly, but she's fine. And then it gets worse from that point. And it that moment does directly lead back to the flash forward that you get at the beginning of the series. But yeah, it's just one of those series that I knew before we'd finished watching it that it had been cancelled, and yeah, we were both quite annoyed watching, you know, the last episode and go, that's it. It kind of stops at a point where it could be, you know, just the end. But there's plenty that could happen, you know, beyond that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that just reminded me. I want to say, but I also don't want to spoil it, because if you watch it, it is a good series, and it does do things that are, you know, you don't necessarily expect them to. I unusually, I had several of my guesses blown out the water. You know, when it's, there, obviously, such and such, and, you know, that's going to happen. And I said, oh, it didn't.
Anyway, I think that's all we've got time for.
Yes, that's definitely all we've got time for in this episode. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night. Yeah, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter at Paul Blewett.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes, Stitcher, I say iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever, it's there. Stitcher, Pocket Casts, Spotify, a couple of other services. You can follow us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, also on Instagram at Nerds Podcast, or on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. That's it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Liberate me. Liberate tutto me.
Liberate tutti frutti.